Hi there, welcome to the Ecclesia Podcast. My name is John Chandler, and with me is my partner in crime, Todd Hestand. Say hi, Todd.
Hi, Todd.
That's enough. Okay. And we also have the man of the hour, as it would be, Bob Heitz, joining us from Portland, Oregon. Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks, John.
All right. We're excited to have you on. And we'll jump right in, because I know that we're going to have to say goodbye to Bob because he's got some kind of aromatherapy, something or other, like they do up in Portland, coming up here in a little while. So
it's chiropractic, but you know, it's particularly Portlandy. So I'm drinking coffee, and
is there sitar music?
There's sitar music playing in the background, and I believe there's some kind of needles involved somewhere.
But sweet. Well, Bob, you're semi-famous. You're on some like
small world,
some important Christian bloggers lists out there somewhere. But just in case there's, for the primary listening audience, which is my mom and Todd's mom, they might not be quite as familiar with some of your history there. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background in ministry? Tell us a little bit about the church that you're part of up there. Tell us about Bob.
Sure. Okay. I had a pretty standard evangelical upbringing. Grew up in the Baptist General Conference, which a lot of people don't know about. It's actually a Swedish denomination. I never knew that growing up. I just thought everybody had that many Svens and Olsens in their church, and talked that much about Minneapolis. But apparently they don't. I loved my church upbringing. I was there. I was that kid that was there whenever the doors were open. Eventually, through Christian school, Christian college, seminary, was really on track for ministry from a pretty early age. Went to Europe after seminary for 2 years, and it was there that kind of my horizons broadened, in the sense that even though I was in technically a Baptist church, because it was an expat church, we had people from all over the world and from all different traditions. And it was kind of a wonderful education in and of itself to just be with so many Christians from outside of the pretty narrow stream that I had inhabited for most of my life. And that kind of started something for me. When I came back to the States, I landed in a small church in North Carolina, and ended up just kind of burning myself out emotionally, spiritually, physically. Just wasn't doing well. And it was at that time that I started doing what a lot of men and women in our situation, in our kind of our stream of the world, have ended up doing, which is reading a lot of Brian McLaren and Len Sweet, and really rethinking the whole church thing, and wondering what would happen if we took more of a blank slate approach. And came back to Portland to do another degree, and in the midst of that, spent a couple months just really rethinking my faith. I never really walked away from it, but I do remember saying to myself, if I never walk into another evangelical church again, that might be okay. I think it was during that time, though, that God really did some good plowing and working in my heart of turning some things over and bringing some things to light, and some healing. And it became clear to me after a while that the whole idea of ministry and church wasn't something I was going to be able to get away from. And in fact, it was something that I loved and wanted to be involved in. I just maybe wanted it to be different than it had been in the past for me. So after a while, I started doing some, I had taken a job at a large mega church as a media guy, and told them when I took the job, pastoral ministry is where my heart is at, and I think that's where I'm going to end up eventually, but I think I can do this for a while. It was my first exposure to the Willow Creek Saddleback kind of
sure.
model,
yeah.
At least in terms of actually working at one. And though it was a good church and a healthy church in a lot of ways, the longer I was there, the more I began to see that we really are moving in somewhat separate directions, philosophy-wise, when it came to ministry. You know, same God, same gospel, but really different ideas about how that should work itself out in the life of a community. Started doing some writing. When they read my writing, which was posted online in various
the Bob
places.
Blogs?
No, this was, you know, remember Next Wave and,
oh, yeah.
And
wow.
The Ooze. They read that and said, you know, we like you, but maybe we like you somewhere else. And so while they didn't exactly fire me, they said, we'll give you 2 months to figure out what it is you want to do. And it was at that point that I really heard God in a number of ways, which, you know, we can go into if you want, but heard God saying to me, it's time to plant a church. It's time to take all these things that you've been thinking about and actually bring them into some kind of reality. And that's where Evergreen had its genesis. And 2004, we called together a group of friends and started meeting as a community, and it's just kind of gone from there.
Did the church you were at endorse that? Were they part of that, or was it completely disconnected from it?
They were about as disconnected as you could be. I mean, luckily my wife also worked at the church at that point and was pregnant. I think otherwise they might have let me go a little bit sooner and with a little bit less of a safety net, but they were gracious enough to let me continue to work, to keep health insurance for another month after that, to let my wife keep working until the baby came. But they made it pretty clear that church planting was not their model, that you know, they were in the midst of what was at that point intended to be a $40 million building program. And so for them, their model really was, we're going to get bigger and bigger and become a kind of Portland metro church, and which they've done. And actually, a lot of the stuff that I was talking about and was trying to bring to light, I think maybe just without the cachet and the credibility of having been around for a while. They are now involved in it doing. They've got wonderful neighborhood groups, and they're really emphasizing serving the city in a way that they hadn't been. And so things have changed there. Unfortunately, I didn't get to be a part of that. But at that point, their model was, no, we are not into church planting. We're not going to start other churches. We feel like God has called us to be a larger church. And so our model is more and more people here, not more and more communities spread around. So, you know, that's fine. That's some people, as St. Rick of Warren says, all kinds of churches for all kinds of people. So,
sure. So what did those, what did those early years of the church you started was the Evergreen Community, which you're still pastoring.
Yes.
What did those early years of the Evergreen Community look like? Because you just kind of went out and did it. And you weren't.
Yeah, we did. I mean, we had no sending organization. We raised a little bit of support on our own, but basically we just got together with our friends and began meeting. I had dreams about what it should look like. You know, we put core values together, all those kind of hip things that churches do. We started meeting in a pub because we felt like, it was the cheapest thing we could find. But B, it really said a lot about us without us having to say it. And so what we found was that the people that we were trying to pull into community, they resonated with us pretty instantly. They kind of intuited some things about us, sometimes wrongly, but usually mostly intuited right things. And the people that probably wouldn't have fit with us were put off by the pub thing. And so pretty quickly we grew a community of the unchurched, the formerly churched, and the people that were on their way to being unchurched or formerly churched had they not found Evergreen.
And so
I don't know what else. Yeah.
Sure.
Keep asking questions.
Well, and so what is that? what does Evergreen look like now then? Is it 7 years, 8 years?
We're 8 years into it, and probably more healthy than we've ever been. We went through Chris Backert, the head of Ecclesia, told us a couple of years ago, oh, you're coming up on year seven. That's traditionally the hardest year in a church plant.
Thanks, Chris.
And I don't think he claims to be a prophet or the son of a prophet, but he was totally right. And it was a really hard year for us. But he also said that years 18 through 15.
Years 35 through 50 are fantastic.
Hang on to year 18. But he said after that 7 year kind of turnover period and things being really hard, he said years 8 through 15 are generally pretty good, and that's been true in our case. So right now after doing some different experimenting with multiple gatherings, we've had as many as 3 Sunday gatherings around town, which really functionally served as 3 communities, but kind of linked by a common elder board and community structure. We've pulled back into 1 gathering, and that's been a good, healthy thing for us. We are actively pursuing 24/7 space somewhere in the city. We'd love to remain in the pub. At this point, we feel like we're not serving our children well, and so we need better space for that. I think the pub thing has kind of gotten into our blood, though. So even if we do eventually move out of that into another kind of building, I can see us putting things back into the pub, whether as church plants or sites of our community, you know, whatever it looks like. But
Never mind, I'm sorry.
My goal is to be in every medium to major market. I feel like the Bob brand, I mean the Evergreen, I mean the Jesus brand.
You mean the Bald Head brand or something?
What do you mean, bald? I've got a lot of hair.
Without your ponytail, I don't think it's going to work, Bob.
Nobody can see this, right? You told me this was not video.
No, yeah.
I have a good head of hair. It's kind of like Elvis mid-20s. Todd and John are both looking at my picture on Skype laughing.
I'm actually seeing you.
I know, my bald head. But one of the biggest changes I think that has happened is that I think a couple things. One is that people are taking more ownership, and it really does take a long time for people to own a community. It took a lot longer than I expected.
Yeah,
I thought that all you had to do was tell people that you own this, you have entree, and people would grab that. But they didn't.
I thought you just needed core values that they liked.
It's interesting how many creative and hip and postmodern ways we find of appealing to various groups of Christian consumers. But people are taking ownership now in ways that they haven't before. We are seeing a kind of a generation of leadership. When we started, we really were borrowing leadership from our evangelical past. Everyone who was in leadership had been trained in that and had kind of cut their teeth in leadership at other churches. And now we're seeing people in leadership for whom Evergreen is really one of their first experiences of that. And that's a beautiful thing. I've stepped back both hours wise and emotionally from the task of leadership. I've handed that off to other people. I didn't want to be the guy that talked about handing off the baton and talked about it for 20 years and finally had to have it pried from my old and wrinkled fingers. So at 42, I've said, you know what, it's time to let somebody else lead. And so a guy that we pulled into community and into leadership about 5 years ago, Dustin, handed that off to him. He's been doing a wonderful job, but also we've distributed a lot of my leadership stuff among the elders. So we really are more than ever a team leadership community, and that's been a wonderful thing to explore.
You, yeah. I know that you had, and I want to explore now in a minute. I want to explore more what you're moving toward right now. But you said a little bit ago that
Sure.
you had multiple locations, almost multiple communities, and now you're back down to, I don't know if you're back down to one gathering, but one location. Was that a matter of a philosophical shift to go back to one, or was it a practical shift?
I don't think our philosophy changed so much as just the, I guess you'd call it the practicalities of it. But, in one of those, we launched a third gathering, and that it was a good space and a good time for our community. I think one of the things that happened with that was that we gave primary leadership of that to somebody, and about 6 months later, he said he didn't want to do it anymore. And we went to that group, to that piece of the community, and said, "Do you guys want to continue on with this, or should we kind of fold back in?" And they made the decision to fold back in. I think if we had more, if we had done it in certain other ways, it could have continued on. It just wasn't the right time. In terms of going from two gatherings, our two main ones, Hawthorne and Quimby, that which both met in pubs, to one, we entered a season of prayer and discernment as a community last fall about just what shape we take in this next season of life, how we want to move forward 24/7 space. And we felt like it would be best for the community to be all together and get to know each other again. We really were feeling more and more like two communities, and we felt like we couldn't do the type of discernment we needed to do in that way unless it was just all the leadership making all the decisions. So we've been meeting together since October, and it's really been good. It's been a good season. It's brought a vitality to our worship. It's brought a connectedness among the community that had been. We've gotten a little fragmented, so it's been good. We're not. We philosophically are not against multiple gatherings, and I think we may end up doing that again in the future. But just for this season, we're at one.
Sure. So what are you moving toward now as you've stepped back from your role a little bit?
I said when I started this thing 8 years ago, I said my intuition was that I was going to spend about 10 years learning to be a pastor, and that I'd probably spend the next 10 learning how not to be.
How's that going?
Actually, a little bit ahead of schedule. It's been good. My goal had never been to be the pastor of a local community forever, but rather to be the pastor of pastors. And to, my hope had been that we would plant multiple churches around Portland, and that I'd be able to serve in a kind of pastor of pastors role to those communities. And so we're finding some of that, but mostly I've been blessed to be able to move into a coaching role with pastors kind of all over the U.S. actually, and that's been really good. I find that hits my strengths, my kind of combination of passion and strength just right. So for me, where I'm going has been towards. I'm still a part of Evergreen, and I've told them, as long as I'm in Portland, I want to be a part of this. I'm asking them to pay me less and less, and finding more freedom in ministry than I've had for a long time, which is great. But my trajectory is towards, well, I know firsthand that the only thing more lonely than pastoring is church planting. And so I find myself in a role of really encouraging and pastoring church planters, and that's been good. And I feel like that's a good and worthy thing to give myself to for the next season in life.
So it's even more than a little bit of coaching. I mean, it's almost a mentoring, spiritual director kind of role to church planters. I mean, are you?
It is with a touch of therapy thrown in.
Yeah.
Which I'm very grateful for the counseling program that I did at Western Seminary, because it all does come into play. I feel like You know, I was just talking with doing some coaching yesterday, and the question that came up was, should we, that this person was asking me, should we be doing more for people in terms of counseling in their local community? And I said, well, should is really determined by can. You look at the gifts and the skill set that God has given you and given to your community, and you work up to that level, and then you refer out. And so I feel like the kind of the interesting mix that God has given to me has been to have experience as a church planner, to have been a pastor who felt kind of out there on my own, but also to have done some work in this counseling field, and now getting a doctorate in spiritual formation. And so bringing all those streams together, I feel like makes for a good mix. It's not for everybody. I think there's a lot of pastors who would benefit from coaching from other people besides me. But I do find that that it makes for a really it makes for some good, interesting conversations that end up often moving off of peer coaching and into just not counseling per se, but at least pastoring.
Right.
And that's good. I think pastors need that.
So you, Todd, I'm jumping all over questions here, so jump in when you got them, but I have one more. I know aromatherapy beckons soon, so sitar music. I wish we need to place a sitar soundtrack quietly.
It can be the opening.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of went out on your own and started Evergreen. Where did the Ecclesia Network come into the picture, and what does that look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. We as an elder team, we're looking at our community, realizing that we are encouraging. We had this core value of community, as most churches these days do. And how we were living it out was that we were encouraging people to be in relationships with each other, both one-on-one and in small groups, and then in home communities. And then we had these multiple gatherings around town, so we were encouraging people to be connected to Evergreen as a whole and be in community between gatherings. But what we realized was that we as a church were not in community with other communities. And we felt like that's kind of where the breakdown was in our living out of that value, that we were this standalone entity. And while we didn't want to pursue denominational affiliation, we knew that we needed something besides ourselves. And it was just at that time that John, you introduced me to the Ecclesia Network, and through conversations with you and with Chris Backert, and through being involved at the national gathering, I realized, oh, this is our tribe. These are some amazing men and women who are committed to the gospel, committed to seeing it lived out in their particular context, committed to mission and to missional living, committed to a generous orthodoxy, if I can use that term, if it hasn't been, co-opted. But it was very much that missional stream of coming off the tail end of the emerging church movement, when it kind of split into two ways of the more left side and the more, universalistic or whatever, and the more missional side. I really saw, this Ecclesia Network, this is us. Hmm. And so it was good to find, it felt like coming home, and that's been one of the most beautiful things about our involvement, is that we realize that there are, we are kind of alone in our space in Portland. There's maybe one or two churches now, but when we started, there was nobody who was, our unique thing is kind of that emergency feel. Dustin laughs at me because of the number of candles I like to put on Sunday. a real commitment to the gospel, yet being open to women in ministry, and so you find pieces of those things in a lot of other churches, but we were kind of alone in putting those all together, at least at that point in Portland. And it was good to find other churches who were thinking along the same lines and connect to them in a network.
Hmm. So that's, it's been, what, 3 years now?
Yeah, I mean, it took me a couple of years to, when a church already has already started, it's much harder to come into a network, because now you're dealing with a whole group of people and talking to them about it. It's easier when you're a church planter starting to just say, yeah, we're going to be part of this thing.
Sure.
And so everyone who comes and opts into the church knows that they're opting into a church as part of a network. When you have to move an established church into a network, it takes a couple. So it took me a couple of years. But we are now fully committed and supporting Ecclesia financially and happy to do so.
You're on the board.
I've now been invited onto the board, which is fun. I'm still not sure what that's going to be all about. It's mostly Todd and I just kind of looking at each other, laughing and listening to Fitch.
It's exactly what it is. That's an impressive rendition of what the board's all about.
Listening to Fitch talk for a while, though now he's off. So I don't know who's
not sure what we're going to talk about. We'll have to look at each other and just be awkward.
I think, Bob, that makes you, I think that makes you, Bob, the eclectic elder statesman.
It does.
Oh, interesting. I'll work up a couple monologues for the next board meeting and
yell revolution a lot.
Revolution.
And,
it'll be
good. Go to McDonald's or something. I don't know.
Todd, I've been banging away with questions.
Yeah, I've been kind of muting myself on and on. We got some work going on here in the building, so I've been trying to keep my noise minimal. But Bob, when we were together at the church planners training, one of the things that you said in your talk on pastoring and kind of living well was the idea of being responsible for or responsible to each other in community. Can you talk about that for just a few minutes? And I thought that was probably one of the more significant things that you put to language what I have been learning the hard way the last year.
And that's, you know, that's certainly not original to me, but absolutely. And it's been really helpful for me to figure out in ministry that as pastors we need to make a distinction between 2 and 4, meaning what often we feel responsible for our community and responsible for the people in it. And so when someone is experiencing a crisis of faith, when their marriage is in trouble, we feel responsible for that. We feel the weight of saving that marriage. We feel the weight of saving that person's faith. And unfortunately, there's not a single one of us that can handle that weight. We cannot be responsible for anyone but ourselves. We have responsibilities to them, though. We have responsibilities to teach them well, to love them well, to show them Jesus, to preach gospel to them, to live out the gospel well ourselves, and then to let Jesus carry the weight of their faith, of their marriages. And whenever I'm feeling anxious about someone in ministry, whenever I'm feeling, you know, I wake up at 3:30 in the morning thinking about this couple, the question I need to ask myself is, have I discharged my responsibilities to them? Am I doing well in my responsibilities to them? Or am I beginning now to cross the line into feeling responsible for them? And the same goes for my community as a whole. I'm not responsible to build this church. I'm not responsible to make it cool, to make it exciting, to make it successful. I'm responsible to it to do certain things. But I have to leave the outcome to God and to the Holy Spirit, both in individual lives and in our lives as a community. And once I begin to be able to make that distinction and differentiate myself from others in that way, I find that a weight is lifted off my shoulders, and ministry no longer is this what it is for a lot of people, this energy and soul-sucking experience, but rather it is something we can engage in joyfully and then put down when it's time to go home, when it's time to be with our families, and when it's time to discharge our responsibilities to our wives or our husbands and our children and our neighbors. Too many pastors can't do that, and it's because they feel responsible for everything that happens and everyone in their community. And it's a tragedy. That's how pastors kill themselves.
I was thinking one of the things we do when we take responsibility for, especially our congregation members, is it's really easy. Like they quickly and readily accept that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, that's kind of their default way. And it kind of trains them. We habitually train them or accidentally train them to give their responsibility for themselves off to us. And then when we don't perform well, quote unquote, you know, or deliver, yeah, they leave. You know, it's easy to get mad at our congregations for that, but it's just as much our fault, isn't it?
It is. How did Eugene Peterson say that? He said something along the lines of most pastors are just this. He used some colorful language, but it was something along the lines of most pastors, just the best way you can sum them up is just this throbbing mess of availability. Mm-hmm. That basically we live these lives without boundaries. And so people do. They will. They're not taking advantage of it. They are taking what it is that you are offered to them.
Yeah.
Why would they?
Yeah.
You know. And so it is up to us to help our communities learn what proper boundaries look like in their lives, in the life of a community, and in the life of a pastor.
Well, Bob, I know you're going to have to run here. You want to tell us all really quick where you can be found online?
Oh,
as
sure.
If they don't already know.
Oh, I know. Well, but the Bob blog is no more.
That's true.
It is. The
Bob
whole...
blah, blah, blog.
Steve Holt. The whole mess has moved over to bobhyatt.me, which is kind of funny. But I love that .me thing. It's tongue-in-cheek. But if you want to find me, look at bobhyatt.me, and you can find information about coaching, some of the links to my writing, and then also my blog.
The Bob blog.
Awesome.
Part do. And then at Bob Hyatt on Twitter.
Yes, at Bob Hyatt on Twitter. And I'm also on the Facebook, and you can find me through the Google.
And what I find is when it comes to Twitter, you are about as meaningful as I am. There was a tweet about doing a headstand at the age of 42 this morning.
Yes.
So
who knew?
I didn't know.
I decided to try it and suddenly I can do it. And I feel like I've wasted years of my life thinking, you know, I could have been doing a headstands all along.
Now, right. can we talk about the, what was kind of motivated you to do a headstand at the age of 42, or is there not enough time for that?
Basically, I was stretching and moved into a yoga pose and put my head down and thought, "Hey, wait a second. I'm 3/4 of the way to a headstand. I wonder if I can do this." And then there I was.
Were you doing the downward facing dog?
No. It was this kind of move where you put your two hands down and you rest your knees on your elbows and then your whole lift up your feet. And so your whole weight is just resting on your hands. You're balancing on your hands.
And it's only possible if there's sitar music, though.
Right.
It helps. Well, in fact. It helps. Something from the Beatles' Revolver album, I would appreciate. That.
Well, that's good to know.
Okay.
Well, that's a good way to wrap this one up.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Bob, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, Bob.
All right, looking forward to hearing that sitar music. Thanks, guys.
All right.
See you guys.
Bye.